My name is Earl Wilbur. I was in the 8th Air Force in the 3rd Division, 13th Combat Wing, 100th Bomb Group, and the 350th Squadron. One of many groups up in the northern part of England during the war. We'd been to Munich 2 days in a row, and so I wrote this down. The English soil is special to me because I was here in the war, young and immortal. I remember the trucks and the pikes in the early morning on the road to the mess hall, chaplain's quarters, and briefing before the sky filled with laboring planes gathering high up over England for the perilous cross into Germany. The briefing over, the target, Munich. Hope we hit it this time. This is the second time around. Flame from the flares from the tower. We leave, sweating out our takeoff once again. Rosaries and Bibles appear while taxiing down the runway. We made it once again, back to the tail for me, the flashy Alder's lamp, red, yellow, and green to guide those behind into their proper positions. Flak heavy over the target and poor visibility, so probably back again tomorrow, another 10-hour trip. I remember most of all the relief of another day of survival. I remember the taste of life.
When I was 7 years old, I was living in Athens, Georgia, going to this little Christian school. My best friend at the time was a kid by the name of Chucky. And Chucky lived up the street from me, and Chucky also happened to be the son of a Southern Baptist preacher. So you can imagine, with a name like Chucky and the tag of a preacher's kid, Chucky got into a lot of trouble. And since Chucky was my friend, I ended up getting a lot of trouble with Chucky too. And I'll never forget that year at school, because there was this one event that happened that just burned in my mind forever. You're thinking, how can you remember something over 30 years ago? Well, you'll see why here in a moment. School was great, and we had one of those weeks where you got to dress up however you wanted with your class. Your class every day would pick a different topic. And one day it might be firemen, or one day it might be police officers, or military personnel, or doctors, or whatever it may be. And so all through the week, we'd dress up of different things, and that day we learned lessons about those things in class. And the last day of this week, on the Friday, our class chose to dress up as Native Americans. And I thought, this is so cool. I mean, I had just been to Disneyland, I got one of those big headdresses, you know, and so I remember getting ready for school, I put this big headdress on with all these feathers, and I got my paper bags before plastic, you know, and I cut it all up and put it on and decorated it and went to school, and all day long, we learned about Native Americans and all the things they did and how they lived and how they worked. We had a Native American lunch and all these incredible things. But here's what happened at the end of the day. See, Chucky and I were picked up by his mom every day. And so what we would do is, everyone was being dismissed for school, we would sit in a hallway on the wall as all the kids would go out to the buses and to be picked up by their parents. Well, this last day of this week was kind of special, because as we're sitting here, it was like a parade, all right? You're watching class after class, because the whole entire school participated in this. And so we're watching a whole class full of police officers go by, and a whole class full of firemen go by, and all these different classes going by. It was so cool. We're sitting there watching everybody going by and just taking it all in. And then came this class. This one class decided they wanted to be bakers, all right? And I thought it was pretty cool, because they're coming down the hallway. I mean, someone was carrying a plate of cookies, and they smelled great. And someone had a plate of brownies and muffins, and then we saw her. There was this girl who baked a cake, and she was carrying this cake down the hallway with such pride. It was a beautiful cake, all this icing on it, and she was so proud, and she was walking this cake down the hallway, and I thought, wow, this is so cool. I'd love to have a piece of that cake, you know? And I remember turning and looking at Chucky like, check this out. And he had already locked eyes with this cake. In fact, when I looked at Chucky, Chucky had this look in his eye. And I knew the look that Chucky had. When he had that look, it meant I was about to get into trouble usually, all right? And so I look at Chucky, I'm like, oh no, what's running through his head? What is he about to do? So I'm looking around, I look at his eyes, and he is locked eyes with this girl with this cake. And so I look at the girl, and I look at Chucky, and I look at Chucky, I look back at the girl, look at the girl, look at Chucky, and I'm trying to figure it out in my mind, and then it clicked. Because there we were, sitting against the wall, Indian style, and Chucky begins to move his legs out into the hallway. Oh yeah, you're catching on to what I was catching on. Chucky was looking to trip this girl. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm trying to put two and two together. I'm looking at Chucky, looking at the girl, looking at the girl, looking at Chucky, going back and forth. And all of a sudden, it's like everything just went into slow motion movie mode. You know what I'm talking about? You know, I'm sitting there looking back and forth, and I'm like, no, don't do it, Chucky. It was too late. Chucky stuck his foot out. This girl started to stumble, and she fell, and she went down. And when she went down, she did save the cake. But what she didn't count on was that her head would whip down into this cake. And cake exploded everywhere. I mean, there was mass pandemonium in the hallway. Kids were screaming, yelling. This girl's crying. And next thing I know, someone had grabbed me by my ear, and I'm being dragged down the hallway. And I turn around and look over the feathers of my headdress, and it's the principal. And I remember as I was being dragged down the hallway towards the principal's office, I looked back and I locked eyes with Chucky. And he had that look on his face like, don't rat me out. You see, you're wondering, Jason, what in the world does this have to do with anything today? Well, nothing really, okay? I just want to tell the story. Really, that's all I wanted to do. But here's what it was. That was my first touch with this word sacrifice. Because I went to the office and I didn't tell my friend Chucky at all. I took the heat, took the blame. To this day, my mom still thinks I was the one who did that. But I did not do it. I promise you here today, I was not the one who tripped the girl with the cake. It was Chucky. But that was my first run-in with this word sacrifice. And that word sacrifice, man, it really means a lot. But sometimes I think we just toss that word around so arrogantly that we say, oh, I mean, this is what sacrifice is all about. We say things like, you know what? I let this person go in front of me at Starbucks. That was a big sacrifice, you know? Or, you know, I decided I'm going to get the iPhone 3 instead of iPhone 4. That was a sacrifice, you know? Or we say something like, you know, instead of that 4-bedroom, 2-car garage, I got the 3-bedroom, 3-car garage with a pool. It was a sacrifice. That's not sacrifice. That's not sacrifice at all. And so today what I want to do is talk about that word sacrifice. Because you see, Paul told us in Romans chapter 12, verse 1, that we are supposed to be living, breathing, walking sacrifices. And so what does that mean? If we don't understand the word, how can we even do it? Well, let me tell you, I'm ill-prepared to teach about sacrifice because I've lived a pretty fairy tale life, to be honest with you. I haven't had to really sacrifice a whole lot in my life because you see, there are two things that always come with sacrifice, and it's the same thing across the board with anybody you talk to about sacrifice. And these two things are this. One, sacrifice is always about somebody else. It's always about somebody. It's never about you. When you make a sacrifice, it's never for your gain. It's always for the gain of somebody else. And two, sacrifice will always cost you something. It always will. And so you know what? I asked a couple guys to come here today and teach us all about sacrifice. What sacrifice is all about, because I've not lived a life where it's a ton of sacrifice, but we have a lot of men and women in this room, in this country, who serve our country every day, who are willing to sacrifice even their lives for the things that we take for granted every day. And so I've asked a couple of them to be here today. Let me introduce them to you as they come up here on stage, and I want to make sure I get all the names and ranks correct. First of all, I got Captain Aaron Titus of the United States Army. I've got, yes. I've got Corporal Ulrich Linhays of the United States Marine Corps. Captain Tom Pippen of the United States Army. And Captain Sean McDonnell of the United States Navy. And he's also the commanding officer of the Naval Mobile Construction Battalion 14. Well, thank you guys for being here. Last night was really special. Just to sit up here and allow these guys to kind of share their hearts and share their experiences with everybody. And so this morning, I want to do the same thing. Just want to ask them a couple basic questions about that word sacrifice and what they experienced in their life and what they've done. And so, Aaron, let me pick on you a little bit first to kick things off. And tell everybody kind of where you served and what you did and kind of what that word sacrifice really has come to mean to you.
I was in the Army for 8 years as a communications officer. Part of that time was 5 years active duty at Fort Hood, Texas. and then some time in the reserves. It was shortly after moving to Jacksonville that I was called back out of the reserves for a year deployment to Iraq. I deployed with the Georgia National Guard, 48th Brigade Combat Team. For 6 months in Iraq, my brigade was training Iraqi Army. The other 6 months, the guys were out escorting logistical convoys all over the country of Iraq. So first and foremost, guys were in harm's way every day, driving up and down the streets of Iraq, escorting those logistical convoys.
Now, that word sacrifice, I mean, when you're overseas, when you're over fighting, things are a little different. Now, obviously, just the fact that, you know, bullets might be flying, but just what you guys have to endure, the conditions you're in, what's it like over there?
Well, the biggest thing for me was that, I mean, what I sacrificed was pale compared to others there, but things that I thought of when I got the orders to deploy for a year was, I mean, what I would miss, the time away from my family for the year. I mean, the birthdays, the anniversaries, the first day of school, even the little things, just the coming home from work and hearing Daddy's home and the kids running up to me and hugging me and kissing me and just little things on Saturdays of waking up with the kids and being there on the couch watching cartoons with them snuggled up to me. I mean, besides that, I mean, just the minor comforts of being in the hot desert, I mean, 130-degree heat with full battle rattle and carrying my weapon and walking in a dust storm and desert where you can't see 5 feet in front of you. I mean, it's just those conditions that...
It's not like you can walk out and dial someone up on the cell phone and call them either, can you?
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Now, you said last night that when you went over, when you enlisted, you take an oath.
Yeah.
And what is that oath?
I mean, and again, that's kind of putting the greater cause in front of you. I mean, take the oath of office is, I will defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And unfortunately, I got the call to put the money where my mouth was and serve my country, and I did it proudly, but it is sacrifice, for sure.
Ulrich, now you were in Vietnam.
Yes.
And as a Marine, what were you doing in Vietnam?
Well, first of all, I just want to thank everyone for having me up here. And part of the invitation was that I can wear my uniform. When I acquired my dress blues, which, by the way, I still have, I was lean, I was mean, I was a U.S. Marine fighting machine. What I'm saying is it doesn't fit anymore. But I started. I was a Hollywood Marine. I started in California, and from there I went to Okinawa. Spent 13 months in Okinawa, and from Okinawa I went to Vietnam, and also spent 13 months in Vietnam. I started in Da Nang, and I moved up to Chu Lai, Phu Bai, and Camp Carroll and Camp Quezon.
Wow! Now, as you were going through your military career, what does the word sacrifice come to mean to you?
Well, at the very beginning, the only sacrifice I had was I wasn't able to drive my car, and I wasn't able to do what I really wanted to do. But it really came to light when the bullets started to fly that some friends didn't make it. So... It's a major experience. And thank God that I didn't have to make that sacrifice.
Now, Tom, you were in Vietnam as well.
Yes, I was in Vietnam in 1967, 1968. Platoon leader, executive officer of the company, and also staff officer for General Ware of 1st Division. I was there for the Tet Offensive of 1968 and didn't enjoy it. But it was a 13-month tour just like you did. And I served with the Big Red One. I was in Charlie Company, 1st of the 18th Infantry in Big Red One. And we were located in the I Corps, which was above Saigon and went north Saigon. Lac K, Lac Ninh, Cambodian border.
Now, Big Red One has a kind of a motto, don't they?
Yeah, that is very appropriate because when I started thinking about this, the motto of the Big Red One is no mission too difficult, no sacrifice too great, duty first. And that's why we went into the field. Our mission was to go in. We sacrificed. Again, we had some casualties, and they were the heroes of the war, those men and women.
Appreciate it, Tom. Now, Sean, you're part of the Seabees, and explain to everybody who the Seabees are. In fact, the Seabees are the ones who have the display out front, and hope if you came in a back door or some side door, make your way out there, take your kids out there, let them interact with some of the servicemen out there that are working with the Seabee unit. Can I explain what the Seabees are and what you guys have learned?
Sure. Naval Mobile Construction Battalion, I'm commanding officer of Naval Mobile Construction Battalion 14, the Navy's construction force. And basically, we do military construction for the Navy, Marine Corps, and our other joint services. Matter of fact, I was telling Ulrich, you know, we're the Marines' best friends because we were developed basically to go forward with them and build all their facilities for them. We were created in 1942 to support the Pacific Island Jumping Campaign, to support the Marines. So we've always been out on the front line with the Marine Corps providing their facilities, a lot of their beachheads, bridges, pontooning, and all that to get them onto the shore and those types of things. So we do anything as far as combat situations. We also do a lot of humanitarian missions. You know, we've got a lot of things going on worldwide besides, you know, some of the things we see in the news every day in the Middle East. You know, we're over in the Pacific Theater. We're down in Africa. We're down in South America. We build clinics. We build schools. We do things to actually bond, you know, and develop that relationship with the local population.
Now, I can imagine being the front lines. I mean, you've got the Marines there, obviously, to provide some support, but you're in the front lines with bulldozers and hammers, yet having to defend yourself sometimes at the same time.
That's correct.
You guys have really, your unit especially, you guys have really learned what that word sacrifice means because you guys have taken a lot of casualties. Explain some of that.
We have. Back in 2004, NMCB 14 was deployed on a six-month deployment, and we lost seven of our CBs during that six-month deployment. To this day, I think it's still the largest loss of life from a Navy unit in support of the war on terrorism. Two separate events, one on April 30th of that year, two of our folks were killed on a convoy by an IED, and we had six members wounded. And then 2 days later, the unit took a mortar round, indirect fire, which killed five of our folks and injured 31. So obviously, you know, Memorial Day and sacrifice means a lot to our folks. A lot of our reserve CBs stay with the unit, unlike active duty that roll more routinely. So there's still several members in our unit that were on that deployment. And remember that. We also have an annual memorial service every year at our headquarters building there at the NAS. Just had that 3 weeks ago. And you can see it in their eyes. Our unit's getting ready to deploy again. We're going in 2012. And, you know, so the folks sit there and see what has happened to some of our folks that have gone forward. And it, I think it registers for everybody what the ultimate sacrifice you might have to pay.
And let me ask you, because we move here to one of our last questions. You guys all know when you enlist the potential of losing your life, sacrificing your life for what you're doing. Now, as you guys are out, and you all have been out and on the field, has there ever been an instance where that, obviously that moment hit where you realize you might have to pay the ultimate price? Aaron?
Yeah, there was a time when I was in Iraq that, I mean, it kind of flashed before me. It came on suddenly. I was a communications officer most of the time in the security of the forward operating base. It was one day I was getting out of my cot in my tent, lacing up my boots. I had just stood up, and I heard the whistle come in. And it didn't register at all until the mortar round hit the ground, and the loud explosion shook the ground. I hit the dirt. And at that point, it would have been too late. But luckily, by the grace of God, I was about 25 meters outside of the effective blast range and unaffected by it. But there was definitely that real threat there at any time.
And when that moment happens, I mean, what flashes through, you know, your mind in that moment?
I mean, at that point, I just thought of all the things that really mattered most. It gave me it refreshed my perspective. At that point in time afterwards, I never thought about how much I would miss working later in the office, or how much more basketball I could watch on TV, or football games, or things like that. I mean, it was time, obviously, my family flashed before my eyes, and all those missed opportunities that could have happened, but by the grace of God, didn't.
How about you, Ulrich?
Well, during my first week in Vietnam, I was a squad leader. I had automatic weapons, 3 machine guns. It was getting dark, and I climbed on top of a great big rock, 10 feet up. Who in their right mind in a combat zone would climb up? I wanted to make sure.
You were new, right?
I was new.
Okay.
I wanted to make sure everything was right. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw a muzzle flash. To this day, I swear I hit my flat jacket and I fell off the rock. It was a firefly. A learning experience.
But I bet you never went on top of a rock again.
Never again.
Now, did you guys do a lot of patrols? I mean.
Well, being automatic weapons, at night you can't see what's happening, so we had electronics where we could listen to see if there was any movement. And if there was any movement, then you would call on a certain machine gun to start firing. The downside was that once you fired, you had to go see what it was that was hit. And you had to go in front of the lines down into the jungle to see if anything was hit. The Viet Cong got wise to that, and they used to send cows and all kinds of other things up trying to confuse everyone.
And lure you guys out.
That's right.
How about you, Tom? Any experience that you had that just kind of really made sacrifice real?
Well, I think you haven't lived till you've had mortar rounds come around you, where you've had your own artillery come up to your position, and also have rockets during the Tet Offensive. And you think about it, and to this day I still think about it, that God was with me. When it's happening, you don't have time to think. You're trying to dig a little bit deeper hole to get into. But I think it came to really with me was Christmas Eve of 1967, and I'll never forget it as long as I live. Very quiet night. Stars were out, just a beautiful night, and things were quiet. And at midnight, we were in what's called a night defensive position, protecting Thunder Road, and there was a little village ahead of us, and all of a sudden, bullets started flying, tracers started flying, all kinds of ammunition going off. We thought we were getting ready for a firefight, and then it all quieted down, and we heard, there was a little church there, we heard Silent Night, Holy Night being sung.
Wow.
In Vietnamese, and I couldn't. At that point, I realized that God was there too.
Wow.
And that was the sacrifice. That's the point I remembered, that what I was there for and what I'd given up.
Wow. How about you, Sean?
I really respect these three gentlemen. I have not really been in a combat situation where I really had bullets flying over my head. I think the closest I came was during my 07 deployment. We had one incident on the camp where I was at that we had some indirect, so the alarm goes off. And that goes through your mind. But even that wasn't an in-your-face moment, if you will. I think one of the things that hit me with that deployment was in the buildup we do to get ready and go and everything, and I know these gentlemen experienced it as well, is when you finally get on that plane, you're so busy getting worked up for deployment and things you got to get done, and as a reservist, you got your civilian job you got to get taken care of and your family and all this other thing, and you finally get on that plane and you've got that long plane ride, and that's where it really hit me for the first time that, hey, I may not come back, depending on what happens there. So that was probably my biggest moment along those lines.
And what so impresses me about you guys and all the people that serve in our armed forces is you have those moments, and when you're done, you don't go back to your house and say, you know what, I'm going to take a week off. It is, you go right back to it, and you get right back to the front lines, you get right back to your job, because what you're willing to do, the sacrifice that you're willing to make to pay the price for the freedoms we have. And so I really thank you guys for being here today and sharing with all of us. And so would you join me in just saying thanks to these guys. Thanks, guys. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate a bunch. Thanks, Ulrich. Now today, as you leave, I hope you take a moment to stop by some of our displays out there, and I'll explain some of those in a few moments. You know, as we talk about sacrifice, it's so hard for us who live in the comfort of, you know, suburban Jacksonville to really understand that word. And I remember for me a couple moments in life where it just kind of really sets in. Because I've had the opportunity to stand at a couple of very hallowed places. I'll never forget standing on the battlefield of Gettysburg and standing in the field where Pickett made his charge and going on a little round top. And as I walk through this entire battlefield, just to see marker after marker and upside down cannon, and just to see all the memories of people who made sacrifices for our freedom. I'll never forget getting on a boat and taking the quiet 10-minute ride across Pearl Harbor and going to the USS Arizona, where over 1,200 men sacrificed, gave their life on that attack on December 7th, 1941. I remember standing there and just going, wow, this is an incredible place. And I'll never forget standing at Arlington Cemetery and watching the changing of the guard there at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier and looking out past it and seeing just thousands upon thousands of headstones of men and women who paid the ultimate price so that I can have the freedoms that I have. And I'll never forget standing on another battleground. Maybe one of the greatest battles in history were fought there on that day. And that was on a hill outside of Jerusalem, where Jesus went to this cross, battled his will to go and do his Father's will, and gave it all up, sacrificed everything for us. In fact, Jesus said these words, and I think it's appropriate on this day, there's no greater love than being willing to lay down your life for your brother. Church, our challenge as Christ followers is to be a living sacrifice, is to every single day of our life try to do our best to embody what these men have shared with us today, what Christ shared with us in his life. So as we go through this weekend, it's a chance for us to say thank you and to celebrate those men and women who serve, but it's also a chance for us to say thank you to our Savior, to Jesus, who paid it all so that we can have life, so that we can have freedom. Would you pray with me? Father God, we thank you so much for what you did for us. God, thank you so much for sending your son Jesus to the cross. And God, I know that had to be an incredible battle, just a battle of wills. And Jesus said it. We read it in the Bible that it was in a garden. There was this huge tug of war, this battle going on, and him saying, take this cup from me. But yet he relented to your will. He sacrificed it all for us. And so as we sit here in this moment of this service, God, we just humbly just say thank you. Thank you for all of those who paid the ultimate price, who sacrificed their life so that we can have freedom. Thank you for Jesus, who sacrificed his life so that we can have freedom. God, we ask all this in your son Jesus' name. Amen.
It was a grateful heart that he finished up, you know, made it. Because you saw a lot of poor boys that didn't make it. A lot of planes go down. I remember the one thing I couldn't get out of my mind was seeing a young man that had bailed out, and he had pulled his chute prematurely, and his tail caught on the vertical stabilizer in the tail, and he was just hanging there. There was nothing he could do. And the plane was crippled, and all the rest of them had bailed out, and he was hanging there. He couldn't do a thing about it. I couldn't get a picture of him out of my mind for quite a while. So there was a lot of things. War is hell, and so young men die. And they're all young. It was a close-knit group and quite an experience. I'm awful grateful that I lived through it, went through it, and I think I became a better person, a better man out of it. I did not do anything great and heroic. I, along with millions of others who served in World War II, and the people were behind us all the way, 100%. And people were willing to sacrifice what they did without complaining. And I hope I haven't seen the best of this country, but I sure did see a great country.